What's up, everybody? It's the Locked On NHL podcast. Joe DiBiase from Locked On Sabres. Mike DiStefano from Locked On Leafs. Mike's first time we're doing a podcast in a while, and I think the funniest part of all of it is we planned this that we were going to return probably a few days ago before, of course, it was known, because it wasn't known until this morning, we're recording on Tuesday night, that Gary Bettman was going to have an announcement. It just kind of happened that we planned, like, all right, we're gonna get things rolling again on Tuesday, and then coincidentally, it's like the first big NHL news in like 3 months, basically.
It just aligned so perfectly to give us something to talk about today. Like, we went like 2.5 months without putting out an episode between you and I, and it really just because there hasn't been much to talk about, and then, you know, life gets busy, and like you were saying, you've actually gotten busier with COVID, whereas most people. Haven't been, but for whatever reason, we just haven't really been able to get on the same schedule and on the same page to get one out. And then we finally said, you know what, let's get it out to the people. They deserve it. Let's get one done. And then lo and behold, we wake up this morning and all the news was, oh, Gary Bettman's going to speak today on the new return to play format. And I texted you afterwards. I'm like, we couldn't have picked a better day to return. Like, it's now we can just talk about it, and it's going to be a great conversation. I'm really excited to get into it.
Yeah, and that's definitely been more so on me that we haven't been able to get one going here on Tuesdays and get back in the swing of things. Having to move in COVID times was kind of unique. Weird. And also, like, you know, I feel like this, of course, would be beneficial if you are this person out there in whatever field of work you're doing. But when you are one of the few people going into your job, a lot of times right now, you're just kind of picking up the slack of the people that can't also be there. So that kind of combination of things has made it a pretty busy month and a half to 2 months here for me. But yeah, like you said, like it was absolutely perfect timing. We could talk playoff matchups, and I'm sure we will. Your Leafs are going to be going up against the Blue Jackets in the play-in round. Columbus is kind of poking a fire for me on Twitter that I want to get into. We got the draft lottery odds, which you said you're 88% before the show started here. You said you're 88% sure of what they are. I was going to say I'm probably like 60, but I think together I think we can figure it out. And I'm sure those listening out there that are also confused, we can hopefully help out as well. And also we could even touch upon this. Well, I'll have much more on this on the Sabres podcast, Locked On Sabres, but the Sabres will be keeping Jason Botro around as their GM. So maybe we could touch on that towards the end if there's time.
I'm just reading that here on the NHL.com webpage. That's kind of a head scratcher, to be honest. So we'll talk about it.
Yeah, it's a weird one. Let's kick things off though with the format in general, and even just the fact that they are coming back at all and that they're first to announce. It's interesting that the NHL, which to me I've maybe criticized them over the years, that almost no matter what it is, they seem to be followers. Like, the NBA is usually the league that's out there in front. And this even happened with COVID. No one really canceled their seasons until Rudy Gobert of the NBA tested positive, and the NBA, within hours, shut things down. Then the NHL followed suit. The Major League Baseball followed suit a couple of days later. The English Premier League. Like, the NHL has always been a little bit of a follower to me, but, like, I got to give them credit. Like, they're the first league that's jumping out there and saying, hey, we've got a plan. Our players association and the owners agree on what it is. We've got things formulated, what we know, and they're also not like speculating. Like, they don't know necessarily when they're going to play yet. They're not fixing dates. They have a list of hub cities, and they're even being forthcoming enough to tell us what the candidates are, which doesn't seem very NHL of them. Because I don't know, I just feel like they would hide something like that for no reason whatsoever. But nope, they're like, these are the cities we're considering, and when we know, we'll tell you. And I got to give them credit. Like, they've been very forthcoming, I think is the perfect word to describe what they've been. And if they were going to come back, I think this is a pretty good way to do it. I don't have a lot of huge issues with their plan.
I totally agree. I think that this is probably the fairest way to do it, because you still did have a couple of those teams that still could have scraped and fought their way back into the playoff picture. And now they're getting a chance to do that with this play-in tournament style format, I guess. A couple of teams probably weren't going to make it, so they're just kind of lucking into an opportunity to make the playoffs. I would say Montreal, probably one of those teams. Also, Chicago, Arizona was trending downward. Those three teams are probably just kind of, they got lucky. And who knows? I think actually it'd be really entertaining to see a team like Montreal. They're going to go up against the Penguins. They can beat out the Penguins and then end up making a playoff berth, and then Pittsburgh, sayonara. That'd be that suck, because then we don't get to see Malkin and Crosby play. But I think it'd make for good television at least. Mm-hmm. But I think it's just the fairest way to do it. Like teams such as Columbus and Florida, you know, the Rangers even, really, they're still in the picture. And over, you know, on the West, you still have a bunch of teams. But, you know, we focus a little bit on the East on Tuesdays here. But I think that this was the fairest way to go about things. And I really like the way they did it. I know Gary Bettman actually credited Leafs captain John Tavares and former Leaf John JVR also for being two people who kind of helped kind of pillar the NHLPA and get this thing rolling. So I like it. I'm a fan of it.
Yeah. And I mean, when we look at the matchups, there's a lot to go over. And when we're talking, I before we get into more of the logistics, I'm wondering about your opinion on like the actual matchups and like the way it's going to happen, and that teams are going to be coming off of month long buys essentially, where they haven't been even on the ice, because a lot of what's going on with COVID right now is that these guys can't find ice. There's no guys to operate there, run the Zambonis, etc. And now like you're going to have Carey Price playing a 3 or 5 game series against the Pittsburgh Penguins. And it almost makes me think that anything could happen. And it's always true that when you need a hot goalie a lot of times to make a run to the cup. And this year, I think that might be more true than ever.
100%. Like, if you look at it, I think the two teams that I really am pinpointing as your kind of Cinderella story runs are going to be Montreal and the Rangers because of their goaltending. Like, I really love Igor Shesterkin, that young goalie from Russia that came up about midway through, and he was unbelievable. I think he got injured and missed like 2 weeks of the season, got in a car crash, but then he came back and picked up right where he left off. He's had an unreal start to his career, and if he could pick up where he left off when the season ended, I really like the Rangers' chances of doing something and going on a big run, because they not only have the goaltending to do it with him and Lundqvist if they want to go with King Henrik, but also like the fact that, you know, Artemi Panarin, Mika Zibanejad are two of the top offensive players in the league. Adam Fox, young up-and-coming defenseman. Like, we talked about it earlier in the season, how much I like the Rangers, and I believe I said that they could make the playoffs. Technically, they somewhat have made the playoffs, so I'd like to say that I was right on that. But Montreal, same thing. You know, you just rely on really, really strong goaltending from Carey Price, who's proven that he can go on like a month, 6 week heater, and next thing you know, the Montreal Canadiens are going to be in round 2-3 of the playoffs. Like, blink and it's going to happen. I'm telling you, it's going to be interesting to see how things do end up shaking out. Interesting to note too that there was two teams who did oppose this format, and they're both in the East, and that was Carolina and Tampa Bay. Carolina, they're gonna have to go up against the Rangers, which I think is why they were a little scared, because they kind of sense that the Rangers could be a team that could go on a heater here and upset some of those teams that originally should have made the playoffs.
Yeah, definitely. The way they were playing, I would not be surprised at all if they run through Carolina here. But again, it's so hard to know what shape players are in and what's going to end up happening. But everyone's kind of on an even playing field that way, I guess. So it's I guess, easy to say that if everyone is on an even playing field, then you'll be able to judge it the same way that you would have been had they just played the playoffs outright on a normal schedule. Now, we could get into that part of it also, like what's being called playoffs and what's not being called playoffs. And what I read about this, which I thought was interesting, is a lot of these NHL teams with their TV providers or their networks that they're on, there's some of them have 70 game minimums to qualify for a certain amount of payment to be considered the entire season. They have things in these contracts written like in between the lines, written language on crazy events like what's happened here in the last couple of months. Should they happen, what happens? And a lot of teams have this 70 game minimum, and a lot of these teams have barely cracked the 70 games. And I think maybe the ones that haven't is the reason, and maybe part of the reason, it's money driven, that the NHL is not calling the qualifying round playoffs, and they're also not calling the seeding round robin playoffs. In fact, the the top four teams playing each other: Boston, Tampa, Washington, Philadelphia in the East, St. Louis, Colorado, Vegas, and Dallas in the West. Those teams are going to be playing under regular season rules. So, yeah, what did you think of that? The fact that they're not calling the qualifying round the playoffs, despite, you know, like, I don't know if you saw this, but the Blue Jackets, I thought was funny, after the NHL made this point that it's not the playing rounds, not the playoffs. Then the Blue Jackets tweet like, all right, we're ready for the Stanley Cup playoffs against Toronto. And they sent out this graphic basically completely going up against what the league was calling it.
Right. I think, I mean, if you're a team, you're going to try and say that, yeah, it's the playoffs, because you can market it better that way. We made the playoffs, whatever. But I think the league is going about saying that it's not the playoffs. The only thing that I can really compare it to is maybe in baseball, when they had like two teams who are tied for the final wild card spot, they would play a one game play in, and whoever gets that would be awarded the final wild card. But those stats don't count as regular season games, but they also don't count as playoff games. And that's just kind of a game that you, like a tiebreaker. That's essentially, I think, what these are. They're just kind of tie breaking games, these play ins. Like, I don't think that, like, if let's say, I don't know, in this game, Austin Matthews goes off and scores 12 points, is that going to break Daryl Sittler's all-time point scoring record? I don't think it will, because I don't think that it's going to count for an actual game, whether it's playoffs or season, because I don't believe that they count exhibition points towards total career point totals or record totals. So it's going to be weird, because it's kind of like they're treating them like exhibition games, but they're definitely way more important than exhibition games.
They are, right. They're meaningful. It's not, it might feel like a preseason game. And there's another aspect of that I want to get into with you too. But yeah, like, Gary Bettman declared the regular season over today, which means, you know, like, Alex Ovechkin ends the season with 48 goals. Like, that's it. If he scores a bunch of goals in the seeding round robin against Tampa, for instance, or whoever they end up playing, like, that's not going to count towards, like, his Wayne Gretzky chase, which we talked about a bunch of times earlier in the season. But again, they're also not going to count towards his playoff stats, I don't think, either. So it's unique. It's weird. It's unique. But I think they did a pretty good job of formulating this plan and putting it out in front of everybody, even when it's not complete. And I think you deserve some credit for that, because you're not gonna know really exactly, I guess, what's gonna happen in today's times until like right before. So yeah, to let people know like what you're thinking, even if it's not completely finalized, I'm all for that. And you've got stuff dribbling out ever since that press conference. Like, I saw Elliot Friedman tweeting about a half hour ago that every team that's going to return to play is going to have two exhibition games before they come back. And even like little things like that, making sure everybody's a little bit crisper when they play these games, is a good thing. We'll get into the draft lottery in just a second, because there's a lot to go over there. There's a lot to go over there. And maybe we'll do the Sabres thing as well. But one thing I want to ask you before we get to that, I'm sure we've talked about this before. Are you a soccer guy at all?
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit.
Okay. So I was watching in the Bundesliga today, which is really like the first major sports league globally, along with the Korean Baseball League, I guess, too, that's returned to play. And today they had like their biggest match since returning, and really their biggest match of the season, between their top two teams, Borussia Dortmund and Bayern Munich. And I'm not sure what this would have looked like for you up in Canada, depending on even what channel it was, but here in the States with Fox piped in simulated crowd noise. And I assume just some guy in an audio board somewhere is playing, you know, goal chants when someone scores. And really, because of the camera work in addition to the audio, they didn't show the empty seats really with the play. And you would have really, like, I forgot after a couple of minutes that it was fake crowd noise. Like, it sounded like a normal game, and it really swayed me. I think I was team no fake crowd noise beforehand, and that's really been more of an NFL conversation. But I think the NHL is going to have to decide this too, with NBC, TSN, Sportsnet, wherever the games are going to be on. Do you put in simulated fake crowd noise, or do you just go with the real arena atmosphere, which is really just silence in like the player sounds and the on ice sounds? And I would say after today, I am team, like, let's put the fake crowd noise in, and I think you'll forget all about it. What about you?
Yeah, I think I wasn't watching the match tonight, so I didn't get a firsthand look at what that sounds like, but I do know that there is a concern about potentially like some of the explicits that could be uttered during games. Like, it's not, they're not quite PG out there on the ice as much as we'd love to think that, you know, Connor McDavid and Sidney Crosby are absolute angels. I'm sure that they have a couple of words that that your grandmother won't like. But, and I think that's also another reason too, just to kind of drown out what's being said on the ice, just in case something happens. I don't have an issue with it. I honestly couldn't care either way if they had it or not. I don't think it's going to bother me. I never really had a strong stance on it. Like, I could just give it to me or not. I don't have that strong of a stance either way, to be quite honest with you.
All right, well, let's get into the draft lottery in just a second here, and then we'll leave some time for what's going on here in Buffalo with the Sabres and the general manager. Before that, though, we want to take a time out, and before we do that, we want to tell you about Built Bar, protein bars that truly do taste like candy bars. As someone that eats protein bars, Built Bars are really all I've eaten in the past couple of weeks since we first were exposed to them here on the Lockdown Podcast Network. You get 16 great flavors. My favorite's peanut butter brownie, although I got to try this cookie dough one because I'm a big cookie dough guy, and they just came out with that one.
Me too.
Yeah, they're low calorie too, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. You're usually ranging between 3 grams of sugar, 4 or 5 tops, net carbs between 3 and 5 generally as well. Give them a shot. I think they're really good. They taste great. Go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get $10 off your first order. Use the promo code LOCKEDON, all one word, LOCKEDON, for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. Joe DiBiase, Locked On Sabres, Mike DiStefano, Locked On Leafs, here on the Locked On NHL podcast, back here on Tuesdays. And before we actually get into the draft lottery, let's just talk a little on-ice conversation. It's been a while before you could really analyze a matchup, but I want to get your first impression. I don't even know if you've really even thought about it yet, but Leafs and Blue Jackets, not knowing, again, like what shape these guys are in, or some of the final finishing touching details on this 2014 tournament. I'd have to imagine that you'd be pretty confident, right, that the Leafs are going to take care of business with the Blue Jackets. No easy task, because they, of course, swept Tampa last year in the playoffs, but the Leafs will definitely be favored in this matchup.
I'm favored, yes. I'm not as confident as you might think. Like,
okay,
I'm seeing a bunch of people on Twitter saying, like, okay, Toronto, full sweep of Columbus, will get to business. You know, they'll easily get the win, yada, yada, yada. I'm not as confident. I'll be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I'm a little bit weary of this opponent, because Toronto seems to struggle with teams that play like this. They can keep up with the, you know, with the speed and skill type players. But for a team that likes to play more of a defensively structured game, Toronto tends to struggle. And if it becomes, you know, who's going to score, like if it's a 2-1, 1-0, 3-2 hockey game, the Leafs don't fare well in those. And, you know, Elvis Merzlikins, the goaltender for Columbus, and if you don't know his name yet, you're going to know it pretty soon. He was unbelievable this season when he came up and played for Columbus when Korpisalo went down. Ended up playing in 33 games, and he has a .923 save percentage, .235 goals against, but 5 shutouts in 30 games.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Like, it's unbelievable. And most of those shutouts came in like a stretch of 11 games or something like that, where he was just playing unreal. So that's what scares me. Like, just the fact that, you know, Merzlikins was unbelievable, and if he can go on a heater again and be that type of goalie, it's scary. Now, Toronto has one of the best offenses in the league. You know, they're up top when it comes to goals for on the season, and they have, you know, players like Marner, Nylander, Matthews, etc. They can score, but when you come up against a hot goalie, it sometimes doesn't matter how much skill you have. The goaltender is just going to steal some games. And that's the thing that worries me about this team. That, and Tortorella is a really good coach. Like, I remember we were talking early on in the season and how surprised we were that Columbus was still sticking around in the playoff race here because of all they lost. Keep in mind, they lost their number one goaltender, Bobrovsky, a guy who'd won a couple of Vezinas. Panarin, a guy who quietly is having an MVP type season for New York. They lost Duchesne. They lost Dzingel. You know, like, they lost some really, really key players to their team from last season. and they just kept chugging along. And that has to do with coaching. At the end of the day, they're buying in their systems, and it's a system that Toronto struggles with. So that's something that I'm a little bit weary on. I do believe that Toronto will be able to overcome it and win and move on into the traditional playoffs, but I'm not as sold that it's going to be a piece of cake, a walk in the park, like some are trying to proclaim it'll be.
Okay, I think that's fair. I think the Blue Jackets, again, I wanted to not make it seem like it's a walk in the park for the Leafs here. I would still pick them to win if we were. I'm sure we'll get the picks at some point for this 24-team tournament. But I think that's right. That, you know, who knows what Merz Lincolns is going to give you in a tournament like this with how well he's played this season, and Tortorella, the factor of that, and Toronto just being a little bit of a question in net. Almost it seems like whenever they get on the big stage like this. So yeah, I think that's fair. I like it. I think that it's a lot more even than people think.
Yeah, and the other thing too is Freddie Anderson. He doesn't get off to the best starts. Like Freddie in October is a struggle. It really is a struggle. And if, you know, you're off for 2 months, which is pretty much a full off season, it's going to be 3-4 months by the time that you actually start playing. Yeah. That's basically a full off season. And he's known for having a slow start. So that doesn't bode well either if you're Toronto. Like your number one goalie is who you're supposed to rely on come crunch time in the playoffs, and he starts off really slow. That's going to be tough. Going to be tough.
It really is more than an off season too, and this is more of a point for the whole league right now than even just this matchup we're talking about, Blue Jackets and Leafs. It's an off season time wise, like yes, in that it's a couple of months between NHL games for these guys, especially if they don't end up playing till like early August, which is probably what the projections are right now if everything goes smoothly. But really, so like brutal. These guys, so all long. These, yeah, I know it's so long, but all these players. All of them, almost every single guy in the league right now, they don't go the entire offseason without skating like this. They don't go the entire offseason without playing. You know, I know that there's these men's leagues that get going, the Beauty League in the summer over in Minnesota. A bunch of the guys from Minnesota and Central Canada go in to play there and just to get a little hockey in. A lot of guys go to play in the World Championships. I know Jack Eichel is one player that does a men's league in Boston that's mostly made up of NHL, AHL, and college guys. Like, these guys are getting in action. And even when they're not playing competitively like that on a lesser scale to stay sharp, they are skating. And other than, you know, like we saw a video of Seth Jones about a month ago getting on the ice. I made this point earlier, like these guys are really not getting on the ice. So Freddie Anderson is, it's almost going to be maybe like 3 off seasons for guys like that that might get off to slow starts, because you're just, I think you're rustier than even coming off a normal off season. I think that needs to be accounted for. Interesting. Yeah. So, all right, let's get into this lottery, because I don't know how much time we're going to need for it. I think that I figured it out for the most part. I think maybe that I'm crawling towards your 88% number for how much I understand it. Originally, I was lost. I was like, it's that meme of Zach Galifianakis in the Hangover, where the numbers are just like crawling over his forehead and he's trying to figure it out. And like, that's what I was basically listening to Gary Bettman that first time explain what the lottery rules were. And that came after, by the way, there were some reports before the press conference or the Zoom, whatever you want to call it, that there was the potential of running more than one draft lottery. And the sound of that out of context was just fueling fires on Twitter. But now I think I got it. So you correct me if I'm wrong, because I think you do understand at this point more than I do, even though I think I got it, is that they're going to draw the top three picks, 1, 2, and 3. And at the moment, there are placeholder number of letters for the 8 teams that will end up losing in the qualifying round. So if one of those teams ends up winning the first pick, then it'll just be a letter, and we'll see that. Like, oh, Team A wins the first overall pick, and we will draw for Team A among the 8 losing teams at a later date. Do you think I have that right? That second phase 2 lottery, as I understand it, will only be the teams that lose in the qualifying round?
Yes, that's the way that I understand it as well.
Okay. There's a chance, of course, you don't have to do that at all if these bottom 7 teams win all 3 picks. Then we won't even have to worry about this. But for example, and I think the odds of this happening are incredibly remote, but let's just say, for example, that we have three placeholder teams win the first, second, and third overall picks. Now there's going to be a second lottery that will decide the top three picks, and it will only be those eight teams that will end up losing in the play-in round.
Yeah, essentially. I think that's the way that I understand it as well. And then you get to the point where they're going to have a 12.5% chance of winning the top spot. Yeah. And if a team like, let's say, Pittsburgh ends up losing to Montreal, like we say could potentially happen, then they could potentially also end up with a chance to get Alexis Lafreniere or Quentin Byfield if they end up with one of these spots. Like it's crazy the way that this is could end up kind of happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that came up actually on our station WGR in Buffalo today. When this came up, it's like, yeah, the Sabres, first of all, like things could have gone worse for them with the setup, but if they dug their own hole on it, that they're going to have the least or the worst lottery odds among the teams that miss. And they're also going to, they finished 25th to extend their playoff drought to 9 seasons. I was actually looking forward to arguing whether their drought would have been over had they been like, say, where Montreal is the 12 seed in the East. I would have said it wouldn't have been over, but we don't even get that. And it came up in that conversation, like, oh, could you imagine if Pittsburgh with Crosby like gets bounced by Carey Price in the first in the play-in round and then they win the lottery? Or could you imagine if that happens with Toronto, who's got all of this talent as well? That again is very remote, but it's crazy to think that, like, yeah, the Pittsburgh Penguins, after being like really good all season, could lose a 3 or 5 game series, and then they could get Alex Lafreniere, like, and play him next to Sidney Crosby for the next 5 years.
It is kind of weird. Like, I don't know if I quite agree with this as much as I do with the way that they're going about the playoffs. Originally, I was kind of more so. Go back to the way that it was before, where before it used to just be the top 5 teams and then you just draw for the first pick. I mean, I guess you could do the top 7 and still draw for the first 3, but just keep it with the top 7. And then if you missed out, well, that kind of sucks for you. But then, you know, you get those teams like Montreal, who's like, and Chicago, and they're saying to themselves, well, we probably, if we're going to get eliminated in a best of 3 or best of 5 series, we probably would rather just not make the playoffs and have a better opportunity to try and get a top draft pick. So why are we, if we're not making the playoffs, you're calling it, because it's a play-in game, then how come we don't get a chance to all get a really top draft pick? And, you know, you can argue it both ways, but personally, I just, the fact that they have these teams who, like, the really good teams who traditionally are playoff teams should have made the playoffs in a regular season, like Toronto and Pittsburgh. The fact that they, as of now, still may have an opportunity to end up with a top pick, I think is odd. Like, I just can't wrap my head around that.
Yeah, it was a, and like Gary Bettman said this a couple times, like, it's a tough situation. There's no perfect answer to this. The lottery part of it might be the weirdest thing of all that's happened for what their decision making was. But, well, you know, I don't, it's not like their chances are very high. So
I don't understand why they won't just wait and do the whole lottery when it's over.
That's like, why not? That's the weirdest thing.
Right? Like, wait 2 more weeks. Yeah. They're saying they're getting this draft, the initial draft lottery, phase 1 of the draft lottery. I believe they said June 26th. And that's where it's going to have the 7 teams. Detroit, Ottawa has 2 picks, the Kings, the Ducks, the Devils, and the Sabres. And then they have qualifying round team A through H. And they have their percentages from 6 to 1% odds of winning. Instead of doing that, why not just wait 2 more weeks until you figure out how these teams in the top 15 all end up getting placed, the teams that get bounced, and then from there, based on points percentage, you end up giving them the odds that they're allotted to. Like, in this scenario, let's say Pittsburgh does end up getting eliminated, then they would only have a 1% chance of winning, whereas let's say they do get eliminated, and let's say one of the qualifying teams end up actually taking the top spot. Now, instead of only having a 1% chance, they actually have a 12.5% of getting the top spot, because now it's all equal for teams A through F, those teams that got eliminated from the play-in games. And I just don't understand why you wouldn't just wait 2-3 more weeks when you're finished that and just have your draft lottery, as opposed to making it so convoluted and confusing.
Yeah, and it would have been different if they were like trying to fit the NHL draft in like right after the season or somewhere in between or before the season, but they're not doing that. So
no, which I don't agree with that. I was always team do the draft when the season's over, because the best part about the draft is some, you know, the big trades that happen. If you're not going to be able to make trades, you know, before the season starts up again, because obviously you're on trade freeze after the deadline, then I never saw the appeal to it. So I was always team do it after the draft. And if that's the case, at the end of the day, I think the reason why they're doing this, they want to get it done early for fan engagement. And the fact that there's this weird, mysterious way that they're going about it, potentially even creating a second draft process where they could sell the TV rights to do the second one for all the qualifying teams if they happen to get one of those top three slots. It's all about money, and it's all about fan engagement at the end of the day.
Yep, yep, that's exactly right. And let's switch over before we get out of here to a little bit on what's going on this side of the border, just a short drive short of where you are. And the Sabres announced today, or at least owner Kim Pegula announced, that their GM Jason Botterill is going to be coming back for next season. That is not a popular move by any means among anyone that's really paying attention, close attention to the Sabres. And what's so funny is we're talking about this 24-team tournament, how close they were to actually making it, and just the fan optimism would have been higher just to have the games played again, just to see Jack Eichel on the ice again. Really, what's interesting about the Sabres with this, they finished 25th in the league. They finished 13th in the Eastern Conference, just outside of this tournament. And Montreal gets in. Montreal had 71 points in 71 games. The Sabres finished with 68 points in 69 games. The night the season was canceled, the Sabres were supposed to play in Montreal. Had they won that game that night, the Sabres would have been in this tournament playing the Pittsburgh Penguins. So literally had all of this extended one more day, there was a real chance that Buffalo would have been in. But now we sit where we are, and what the likelihood is they're going to go from March, mid-March, which would have been right around the time of their last game, and they're not going to play a hockey game. We're not going to play a hockey game here, and this would be true for all teams that aren't in this tournament, are not going to play until likely early January of 2021. That's 9 months of no games. And the Sabres made the decision that they're going to be keeping general manager Jason Botterill around. That's a long time. It's a lot of time to figure out what you're doing for next season. 9 months is like the longest offseason really of all time.
Whole pregnancy.
Yeah, exactly. It's being met with a lot of criticism, and I'm right at the front of the line with that. I did me and my co-host Jordan Hanskin basically were ranting back and forth, doing a quick podcast on that after it happened today. There's just like,
let me quickly get your thoughts on that, though, because I understand that they haven't had success, and he's been around now for a few years and they haven't had success, but I don't think it's more so the players and the coaching that I think, because I think Jason Botterill has gone out and he's done a pretty good job when it comes to trying to add talent, whether it's via trade or via free agency, and the players just aren't able to get it done. Like at the time I thought that the Jeff Skinner trade was great, and then signed him to a contract, but he put up 40 goals and then now he's did absolutely nothing. And there's a lot of other signings that they made, like Carter Hutton was good for like a couple of weeks and then he just turned into absolute crap. I don't know, I don't blame Botterill as much as I blame the on-ice product.
But I think at the end of the day, you look at a 3-year sample size now of what he's done, and there's not enough of the talent that's been consistent for them on the ice. And I think really when it comes down to, well, the player, like over a 3-year time span, if the players aren't living up to expectations, well, that's to me more on the GM than it is on the coach, because the GM is the one choosing the players to come in and play for these guys. And there isn't, like, he has made good moves. He certainly has. The Jeff Skinner trade, I mean, even with the contract, throw the contract into it, which is certainly way too expensive for what Jeff Skinner is as a player. With the contract, it's still a great trade. You only give up a second and a third round pick for a guy who scored 40 goals last season and definitely had a rough go over this year, but. Cliff Poo, yeah. I mean, that I can't believe that guy was like the main piece of a trade.
The only reason I talk about that trade is so you could say Cliff Poo, so it's you exactly. Can't leave it out. What's the point of talking about the trade? Come on.
Yeah, Exactly. And there are other moves, like him bringing in Henry Yokiharyu, who to me was their most consistent defenseman all season. I think Dahlin was their best defenseman, but he had a rough start to the season. Yokiharyu straight through the season was great. And he was a first-round pick of Chicago, I think, just 2 years ago. He got him for Alex Nylander, who's a guy who is struggling to even make it in the NHL. And he's made other moves. But – no, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I just – you look at the last two – deadlines, you know, bringing in Brandon Montour, that was a really good pickup. This year brought in Dominic Cahoon, who I actually really like, back when he was playing with Pittsburgh. I thought that was a pretty good pickup. They signed Connor Sheary a couple off seasons ago. He brought in Wayne Simmonds just for a veteran presence.
That was a weird pick.
Yeah, it is what it is, but I mean, it's still a move that I'm on board with. Like, he's made a lot of decent deals, and he's been active, and he's tried to make the team better. Just for whatever reason, once they get to Buffalo, they forget how to skate and hold a hockey stick. Like, I don't know what's in your water, man.
I know. There's a couple of things, though, that I think are really going against him right now, and why I don't believe he should have been coming back for next season. And it's really what he was sold on when he came here. He came from Pittsburgh, and one of the big selling points on him as GM was, well, this guy's like a cap wizard. He was one of the main staples of the Penguins organization, figuring out how to always have cap space so they could go add Jerome Iginla at the deadline, or add Gary Roberts at the deadline, or find a way to get Marc-Andre Fleury on a $7 million a year contract. Like, there was always cap room wiggling around in Pittsburgh. And he came here to a Sabres team after Tim Murray had left. I wouldn't say they were in great cap shape. They weren't. But they also weren't like in dire straits. It wasn't a disaster. And really what he's done is he has kind of got them into cap jail. They have only 10 players under contract for next season, but by the time they end up signing all of their RFAs, Sam Reinhart's going to command a big contract. Dominic Cahoon, Victor Olofsson is going to be a couple of million bucks each. Montour, they've got to re-sign. Lawrence Pilot's another guy they've got to re-sign. Linus Ullmark. They got a lot of RFAs to sign. And even then, you won't fill out your cap, or you won't fill out your roster. By the time they get all of those guys signed, they're really going to only end up with about $1 million to $2 million of cap space. And when you're trying to improve the team to get above what they've been under 3 years for him, which was 31st in the league, dead last, then 27th, and then 25th, when you were sold to us as, oh, we're going to have this cap flexibility so that, hey, when Michael Granlund comes up to free agency, like he's going to this year, who's not even like a superstar, will you be able to go get him? And even a guy like Granlund, who's going to command $4.5-5 million, you're set yourself up in a position where you can't even afford a guy like that. That's the one check against him right now. And the second one is just, as good as some of these trades he's made is, the Ryan O'Reilly trade really just kind of cancels all of it out, because he played such an important role for them. He played the most minutes on the team, and I think Eichel, with his jump this season, would have eventually surpassed him. But Ryan O'Reilly walks out the door, and they've really had nothing come back in the other direction. In fact, they took as much cap space on with the O'Reilly trade as they sent out. So it wasn't even like it was a cap move. The prospect, Tage Thompson, has not developed into anything as of yet. The first round pick, Ryan Johnson, who was 31st overall. I mean, 31st overall is not a super high success rate for the league, but we'll see what he is in a couple of years. And then they basically took salary back from St. Louis so that the Blues could fit in Ryan O'Reilly's salary. He sent away a 60 to 70 point player that plays every role on the ice, that went to St. Louis and was their number one center while they won a Stanley Cup. And he has done nothing to replace that guy. And that to me is the biggest check against him. Center is so important. And you look at the numbers over the past 2 years, and I think I had looked this up a couple months ago. I wish I had off the top of my head, but I think it's still true that as of a couple months ago, O'Reilly in the two seasons had more points than all of the other centers on the Sabres that weren't named Jack Eichel combined. And like, when that position is that important, like, you got to do something to address it. And he's just been very conservative as a GM, and he hasn't really took a shot there. So I don't think maybe he deserves as much hate. Like, I think you're making a decent argument for why it's not the worst thing in the world that he's sticking around next year. And it's probably not the worst thing in the world, but I still think with all of this time, like, you maybe should have seen if you could have find someone else that would have 9 months to figure out what they want to do.
Is your thought process that if they did bring in somebody else, would this be kind of a tinker and keep going for type scenario? Or do you think that would just signal another few years of a rebuild to try and rework their roster and try and rework who their core actually is?
I wonder that. Because I don't think you can do a rebuild. I don't think you can do another rebuild. They've done basically two already. And I think, and as sad as this is to say, you've got to start operating your team thinking of Jack Eichel's mindset. He's now 23 years old. He's been in the league for 5 years. And if you think of what Jack Eichel's background is, he's a kid from Boston, Massachusetts. And I brought this up on the Sabres podcast earlier today. If you're a kid from Boston, Massachusetts, there's that picture of that kid from a couple years ago when his sign at like the Patriots parade says, "I'm 11 years old and this is my ninth championship parade." Like, if you're a kid from Boston like Eichel and you grew up with Tom Brady and the Patriots winning Super Bowls and the Bruins winning Stanley Cups and the Celtics being good all the time and the Red Sox winning the World Series, then you go on to Boston University, who's like the best team in college hockey for a couple of years. And then you show up here with the Sabres and it's basically all – it's just straight losing, something that you've really never known, especially Eichel. I'm sure he was the best player everywhere he played leading up to the NHL. And for 5 years now, it's been that. And he's under contract, and I don't think that we're near, you know, him demanding a trade. I'm not getting into stuff like that yet. But it's tough for me to think Jack Eichel's not human if 2-3 more years go by, and that would be a rebuild to me, and he doesn't demand a trade if it's been 8 years and he doesn't make the playoffs. You know what I mean? Like, at some point, you have to think, all right, he's 23, and he's got this elite talent that we're kind of just wasting. And then Dahlin's going to come along and you would hope that you're not doing the same thing with him.
So who are the guys that you think are people that they could build around? Like, to me, I look and I think there's probably four, maybe five. Like, I would say Jack Eichel, Sam Reinhart, Rasmus Dahlin, obviously.
Yeah.
And then once you get there, I mean, Olofsson was really good this year to start out. I mean, again, he got hurt, so it's still a limited sample on that. And then if Jeff Skinner can turn it around, I think that, you know, he's going to be a solid contributor for the next, you know, 4, 5, 6 years, hopefully. But aside of that, not much else that you would say is part of your core.
I'm really almost at a point where I would just say your core is Jack Eichel and Rasmus Dahlin. Like, I would listen on any other player, and that includes Skinner's contract. I don't think like you're trading him or anything. But even Reinhart. Reinhart's a great player, and I think Reinhart is not the problem whatsoever. And I would not be calling teams, you know, trying to unload him. But if someone came calling for Sam Reinhart, I'm not hanging up the phone, because I'm at a point where, you know, he's a very good player, but if they've been at the bottom of the league for so long that I got to listen to trades on very good players and see if maybe I could capitalize on their value. I would, for what you're saying here, like players that will likely be around, that they will likely build around, Eichel and Dahlin are a part of it. Skinner is under contract. He's certainly a part of it. I think Reinhart's a part of it. So all the guys you mentioned, I will, and that includes Olofsson, if he continues on the track he's on. With that shot, I think he's probably a consistent 20 goal scorer every year. I would throw Joakim Haru into the mix too, though. I'm probably higher on him than most, and in part it's because for teams building their defense core up, passing is always the number one trait I'm looking for. And I'm telling you, Joakim Haru is like the smoothest, crispest passer I've ever seen in a player as young as him. Now, He has limitations. He's not like the biggest guy in the world. He's not the fastest guy in the world. He doesn't have the biggest shot in the world. So I would say his physical abilities are pretty average, but it's like he never makes a bad pass. Every single one is always right on the tape. And I think he really could be, he's at least a second pair defenseman with maybe top pair potential, but he's a maybe at this point. So I would say potentially he's thrown into that group you mentioned, but otherwise that's what's going on with the Sabres right now. Pretty much.
I have one more question for you, 'cause I am curious about why this is kind of the way that it happened. So does he have one more year left on his deal? Is that they said he will be returning for the the final year on his contract? Is that basically, or does he have more seasons?
It wasn't a renewal. No. It wasn't a renewal. If he has term left on his deal, I don't know how much, and I don't know if I've seen that out there. But it wasn't like they re-signed him.
So I wonder if that has anything to do with, you know, the whole COVID thing and the fact that they're losing so much money as is, not only with the NHL, but also, you know, they're probably going to lose some money with the NFL too. I wouldn't suspect that they're going to be able to pack New Era Field with, you know, the tens of thousands of people that they normally do. And if the fact that they just didn't want to flush that money down the drain just to go out and get another guy, and they said, you know what, we'll give it one more year, and then if it doesn't work out, then it doesn't work out. But we can't really afford to just flush, you know, $2-3 million down the toilet with another GM.
Yeah, I think that that's a good point. I think that very well could have been the motivating factor. There's been furloughs and layoffs here that would point to stuff like that. The whole league, I'm assuming, is under some sort of financial crisis, and sports teams is not really the business you want to be in at this moment, in this pandemic. And the Pegulas own, it's not even just the Bills and Sabres. Like, they own the Rochester Americans of the AHL. They own the Buffalo Bandits here of the NLL. They have facilities. They sold the Buttes, so I was about to say them, but they don't own them anymore. They're back under control of the NWHL. But yeah, they've got a lot of money stuff going on that I think maybe that could be a motivating factor. And you have to remember, like, they're paying a lot of coaches and GMs. Murray's contract just ran out, I think, this year. They're still paying Phil Housley. I don't think they're paying Bylsma anymore. I think that's probably over. But in the NFL, Rex Ryan, I think, maybe is still being paid by them for another year. Their GM with the Bills, Doug Whaley. You want to hear a funny stat? I think there's a bunch of these around the league that are maybe even better, like Ilya Bryzgalov in Philly. But Christian Ehrhoff gets an $800,000 a year check from the Sabres every year until 2028. Isn't that amazing?
Hey, man, when they signed that deal, though, that seemed like a bargain. $4 million for a guy who put up 50-something points?
It was right? For a decade, though.
I know.
He signed a 10-year contract. It's crazy. Oh, I miss those crazy long contracts. The Kovalchuk 17-year contract with New Jersey was just like, I remember reading it for the first time and just laughing hysterically, because he was like, it was till he was like 48 that he signed that contract.
Well, I can tell you, as an undercover Canucks fan, I'm not a fan of those long contracts, because it's coming to bite us in the ass with Luongo right now with that recapture penalty. So,
yeah. That's actually why the Sabres bought out Ehrhoff when they did, because it was the compliance buyout and they got out of the recapture penalty. Yeah, that's right. And Vancouver had to deal with that. All right, we covered a lot. It was fun getting back on this, and we're going to keep doing it consistently. And it's nice that we're going to have, you know, stuff to talk about now.
Definitely. I'm so glad. Like, again, like we said at the beginning of the episode, it was just kind of perfect timing that we decided to get back into it and start doing consistent podcasts. And there just happened to be a huge news dump today. So we were able to chat about it, and that was a lot of fun. And I look forward to keep on doing it every single week here on Locked On NHL.
Me too. And we will look forward to talking to everybody next week and in the coming months. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at SneakyJoeWGR. And you can follow Mike on Twitter at Mickey_Canuck. This has been the Locked On NHL podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.